Thanks for listening to the best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
If you have not heard what Le'Veon Bell said, it's one of the greatest answers in the history of 911 calls. Poor Le'Veon has been the victim of a robbery. There is $1 million in jewelry missing. He has called 911 to report it, and the 911 operator is trying to figure out, how do we catch the culprits? How do we catch the people who stole Le'Veon Bell's $1 million in jewelry? So she starts to ask some questions about who the suspects are. This is 100% real. This is Le'Veon Bell describing the suspects who stole his $1 million of jewelry.
Since you said that you know the girls who did this, I need to get their description. Are they white, black, or Hispanic?
The girls, one is mixed, and they're both mixed.
Okay, their skin color, if an officer was to drive by, would they look more white, black, or Hispanic?
One will look more black, and the other one will look more Hispanic.
Okay, the one that looks more black, how old is she?
23.
What was she wearing today?
When I left, she was in the bed. She was in the bed, not wearing clothes, but she left. So I didn't see her. Was she, you know what I'm saying?
Okay, and the other one, you said she looked more Hispanic, is that correct?
Like, she looked more like, if anything, like, white or Hispanic, yes.
Okay. How old is she?
She's 21.
And what was she last seen wearing today?
The same way. She was in the bed, too. They didn't have clothes on.
Oh, okay.
That is so, this is one of the great all-time humble brag, not maybe the greatest humble brag 911 call of all time. Le'Veon Bell calls 911, says that he has had $1 million in jewelry stolen from him, asked to describe the women, says that they're both, this sounds like pretty good looking, right? 23 years old, 21 year olds, both of mixed race. One of them looks more black, one of them looks more white Hispanic, all right? Asked to describe what they were wearing when he last saw them, he has to say they were both naked in bed. Now, you might be thinking to yourself, where did Le'Veon Bell go if he had two naked women in bed with him? To Le'Veon Bell's credit, he went and worked out. Now, why he needed to work out after having two naked women in bed with him, I don't know. But this is a man who cares deeply about his performance on the field. And so he got up, put on clothes, went to go work out, left two naked women in his bed, and they stole $1 million in jewelry, allegedly, according to him. Where does this rank on the greatest 911 calls of all time? How many times do you think we've gotten a call 911 and when asked for a description of what somebody was wearing, a caller said, the two women were both naked in bed, so I can't tell you what they were wearing because of the situation when I left.
I can guarantee you that's the first time that operator has ever heard anything like that. Yeah, I don't know. That's never happened in sports, I don't think. I mean, God, because most athletes, you're right, would just stay in bed, stay with the girls, and go work out later.
And most athletes wouldn't have $1 million in jewelry stolen. Now, some of you out there are like, oh, this guy's an idiot. I will defend Le'Veon for this reason. First of all, he got up and he left the two naked girls to go work out, which does require some discipline. Secondly, people are like, man, why does this dude have $1 million in jewelry? Why is he hanging out with the kind of women who would steal $1 million in jewelry from him? He's single. He could have been a lot worse if he got married. At least they can only steal his jewelry. Imagine how many athletes and men out there across this nation who have married the wrong woman and had her take half of everything that they own, not just the jewelry.
Yeah, and his jewelry is insured.
Probably. Probably a part of the homeowners. I'll say this, I'm hopefully never going to get divorced. I'm about to be married for 15 years, but this is actually true. We were out at a bar or restaurant, and I gave my credit card. And my wife, when we were leaving, I realized that I had left it. And I was like, oh, crap. You know, I left my my credit card there. My wife was like, you better go back and get it. Somebody's going to get your credit card and they might run up a bill on it. I said, you know what? I should just leave my credit card at the bar because whoever steals it is going to end up spending a lot less money on it than you do. Like this, like I don't know if I want to call and report this credit card stolen or not. As long as it's not in your possession, it's actually saving me money. So maybe that's Le'Veon's plan here is even though he may have gotten $1 million in jewelry stolen, he at least was not married, so he doesn't get half of his money stolen. So when you hear this, Dub, when you hear that Le'Veon Bell has got two naked women in his bed and that they stole $1 million in jewelry, does it make you like Le'Veon more or less?
I mean, it's just so relatable, you know? So, I mean, no, I mean, I love it. I mean, it's good
this
for him. You're so right. I mean, who would actually get out of bed and go work out in that situation?
Someone unless that he's always got multiple naked women in his bed. And so it's just kind of like, oh, I just got naked chicks in my bed again. I'm going to get up and go to the gym no matter what.
I mean, that kind of has to be the case, I think. I mean, no normal person would do that.
Yeah, like your normal guy, if he manages to pull off a threesome and he's got a 21-year-old and a 23-year-old girl both sleeping naked in his bed, he doesn't wake up the next morning and go straight to the gym. Like if you were talking with your buddies and that happened to you and they were like, well, what'd you do when you woke up in the morning? It's like, well, I went down to the gym and got in a CrossFit workout. I was like, what? You had two naked? And then what happened? Well, I came home and they had stolen $1 million in my jewelry. Then your buddies would be like, yeah, of course they did. You just left them in the house, you know, by themselves and went to the gym and started swinging kettlebells around. Are you an idiot? So, yeah, I can totally see how relatable it is there. But I also love the fact that he called 911. Is that really a 911 call? Like, they always have that advertising campaign, is it or is it not a 911 call? Is that a 911 call? Like, is it necessary that you call 911 if some of your jewelry got stolen and there are two women on the lam, or could you just call the regular police number and have them come by your house?
I mean, $1 million is $1 million. I'm calling 911 if that ever happens to me.
I don't know. I'm kind of torn on this. It was an interesting question. Like, there isn't any immediate physical danger. I thought 911 was only supposed to be if there was, like, immediate physical danger involved. Like, somebody has a heart attack, you call 911. Somebody shows up at your house with a gun, you call 911. You come home and your house has been robbed, you're not supposed to call 911, are you? Like, wouldn't you just call the regular police? Unless you think there's an intruder actually in your house, and you might not know, in which case you might call 911. Like if you came home and your door was just kicked in, you might not want to just start walking through the house in the event that somebody's there actually robbing from you. I don't know. Eddie, you're one of the most reasonable people on the show. Would you call 911 here, or is this a regular police call?
Well, I wouldn't call 911, but this is a man in Le'Veon Bell who also didn't know you could get a DUI for smoking weed and driving. So it's not like he's all that well-versed on, you know, the proper legal things to do when things happen. So not surprising.
What about you, Danny G? Is this a 911 worthy call? I mean, leaving aside, it's clearly 911 worthy for us when an NFL player or an athlete in general calls and says that there's two naked women in his bed. We're probably going to play it, certainly when they also steal $1 million from him. But in general, like, how would you break this down?
Yeah, it's a great question. In fact, I looked up the etiquette online really quick. When to call 911. A fire breaks out.
Yeah, easy one.
A medical emergency
happens.
Easy
one.
Easy. You witness a crime or possible crime.
Yep.
Four, if you're in or you see a car crash.
Yep.
And then the list of when not to call 911. A loud party or barking dog.
Yeah, makes sense.
A power outage.
Yep.
Burst water pipes.
Yep.
To ask about paying a ticket. You have a cold or flu symptoms, it says. Or someone has a minor cut.
Kind of in the middle ground,
yeah,
right?
There's nothing. From 911, safeb.com, there's nothing here about two naked girls in your bed stealing $1 million in jewelry.
Yeah, it's a tough call.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
We're joined now by Dan Wetzel, live in France. Dan, how's it working over there?
hey, we finally got through.
Yeah, I don't know how the technology works to be able to call for answer, what numbers work and which ones don't. They still have the country code process. Like every time I'm overseas, it's more complicated to call a phone than it seems like it should be. But we got you there. What was the vibe like? You were at the U.S. women's game yesterday against Spain and wrote about it for Yahoo Sports, where you're a national columnist. What was the vibe like yesterday in the stadium?
Well, what's really cool about this event is, I mean, it's a great little stadium, about 22,000 seats, and there was probably, 15,000-17,000 Americans, then a few thousand Spaniards and a few thousand French people, just kind of locals that went. So huge red, white, and blue. They're doing the chants. It's pretty wild how much of a crowd is following, trying to get to the American game. So they've dominated that way, and obviously they're pretty happy with the victory. It wasn't the best game the U.S. played, but in these kind of knockout rounds and in a game of soccer, it's just who cares? You win, you move on, and there weren't any big injuries. No one got too many yellow cards or anything like that, so they're suspended. So it's you move on, you play France in the quarters.
What did you think about what was the reaction to the penalty kick that was awarded to the United States in the 75th minute that gave the U.S. the 2-1 win when it was converted?
Well, the crowd loved it, because they're all Americans. They don't really care. That's a tough call. Obviously, there was contact. They went to the video reviews. This is why they have it. Could you have let that one go? Yeah, probably. But, the thing was, the Americans were playing the game in Spain's end of the field. And the more plays that are in the penalty box, the more likely something's going to happen. And that's why teams want to clear the ball as quick as possible, or control ball control, or all that. Eventually, you knock someone down, you trip somebody, there's an inadvertent, there's a handball, something like that happens, and you get PKs. And so that's how the U.S. won. In a lot of ways, it's like a field positioning victory in American football, where you have the ball down there enough, you get two PKs, you win the game that way. You'd like to see them score a run of play. They didn't get that done, but again, a victory is a victory.
I know that you are probably going to have a difficult time assessing the overall French sports marketplace, given that you are not French and you are on you are on vacation in France. But how much attention seems to be upon the Women's World Cup in France, as the U.S. now will be playing France on Friday in Paris?
So, I think it's been jarring to see how little promotion there is from FIFA. Now, the French media is covering this. There's no question. If you look at I can't read the paper, but
it seems like they're talking about it quite a bit. There's pictures.
Yeah, I can see the pictures.
Yeah.
I can see the pictures. Yeah, there's TV. They definitely have all these people talking on TV. So I don't know what they're saying, but they're definitely on the subject, which is all that matters. But what's jarring, though, is FIFA. And look, you hear that we're treated second class. So it's not as big of a deal. They don't promote us. There are no billboards in Paris. I've been in Paris, I've been reading. There's nothing. There's no welcome soccer fan signs at the bars. There's no, there's just no organization to it. There's no, there is a fan fest, but it was like under-publicized yesterday. Like, there just isn't that. Reims is a city of like 160,000 people. Okay. Whatever town that is, Fort Wayne, Indiana or something, hosting the Women's World Cup. This is the biggest thing that's going to happen there. And the idea that you just aren't plastered with, Women's World Cup, and we're doing this, and we're doing this, and we got this, and all the different events you could have done, is just kind of amazing. And the fact that FIFA hasn't just, if you've been in New York in the last 2 months, all over the subways, it's U.S., inside the New York City subways is U.S. national team stuff, and in other cities too. And you're just not getting it here. And it's just sort of disappointing, because you're like, yeah, you know what? They got a point. The FIFA does not care about this event. And this is not – I've been to two men's World Cups, and it is overwhelming. It's like Super Bowl-like. And here it's like, oh, yeah, by the way, I guess this is going on also.
And I think Canada, to be fair, in 2015 promoted the hell out of the Women's World Cup, right? I went to that final in between the U.S. and Japan in Vancouver. And, I mean, it seemed like it was a massive deal for Canada. So maybe to some extent, is this just France kind of collectively shrugging its shoulders? Because I think it's fair to say, while in America the women are a big story, the big issue in general with FIFA is they're trying to sell the Women's World Cup to the world, which really doesn't care anywhere near as much about women's soccer as it does men's soccer.
It doesn't, but it could. You know, the game's developed to where it's a pretty good level of soccer if you're just a pure soccer fan. And that wasn't the case. But you certainly could. And I think this is also it. I was in London before I came over to Paris, and other than a big Nike display, and you do see this, the shoe companies, Adidas, Nike, New Balance, they're all doing stuff inside stores. There was no signage there. And you can get, it's a two-hour train ride.
Yeah.
And you could promote this all over
Europe. And England is good.
And England is very likely to meet the U.S. in the semifinals, or the French U.S. winner in the semifinals. So yeah, a real contender. And so they're just not. I don't know. Maybe it's the French local committee, but FIFA shouldn't allow that to happen. Like, you can't just host a Super Bowl and go, yeah, we'll put a couple posters up. Like, you have to commit to all of this stuff, and that just isn't happening here. And there's no reason that people in France can't, and these other countries can't get excited about women's soccer. They love soccer. The women's game is good. They're starting to get better. All these the tournament is being dominated by European countries right now, other than the United States. And so it's sitting there, and it could be a huge growth industry. And there's that equality, power, empowerment, all the arguments you make. I mean, this is a very liberal part of the world. You know, you would think all of this stuff would feed very well. So just not doing it, and I don't know why. But I think it's a missed opportunity. Now, I do think Friday night, this is going to be a huge game because it's the local team and it's the defending champs, and it's probably the two best teams in the world. Winner probably wins the World Cup. And so Friday night's game in Paris is going to be huge. But it's not in an 80,000-seat stadium. It's in a smaller stadium. So we'll see.
So I'm curious on this. Do you think the U.S. or France will have more fans in the Women's World Cup in Paris, the game on Friday?
It's going to be really interesting because the only other games that have had good crowds are ones involving the French team, which obviously makes sense. So
I heard the ticket is insanely difficult to get right now. I don't know if you've checked the ticket market. I know you've got your daughters over there.
Fortunately, they're going home before that one, so I'm not have to pay that.
Yeah, so but I mean, the prices, I saw the headline. I mean, we're talking about $1,000 for a ticket because the venue is not that big, right, like you said?
Right. Yeah, they didn't – and even the U.S. game – last night, I mean, it was $200-$400 to get into the game because it's a small stadium. Now, it was a great environment because you're not in this big football. It's not this big, you know, you have 40,000 and 80,000 seat stadium. You have 21,000 and 21,000 seat stadium. So it is a great environment. But yeah, I think they underestimated that. So yeah, if things are going for a grand, I'll have to check in a little bit. They misjudged this thing. Megan Rapinoe last night said she thought, you know, it might be 50-50. She's like, we dominated, but I'm not sure about that. You know, how many do we have? You also have a lot of Americans went early because they knew there were guaranteed games. So if you're sitting there flying over now and saying, okay, we were banking on them making it this far, you know, it's a little riskier of a trip where you knew the first three games and really the fourth game were almost all guaranteed.
Now, are you going to stay as long as the U.S. women are there, or are you coming back stateside?
No, I'm there till the U.S. women either win or lose.
So this is, I mean, like, so what are you going to do solo in France for 2 weeks?
Probably what I do solo in the U.S., like, you know, eat and drink. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're sending your family back. And so, I mean, now you're just, I mean, there's probably a lot of people.
Working, Clay. Working.
Yeah, a lot of people out there thinking, you know, I wouldn't mind being in France for a month to watch the Women's World Cup. I mean, it's not like there's games. It's like the Olympics, like, you have stuff you have to cover, like, every day, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's eight events going on every day. The World Cup isn't really that difficult of a, you know, I mean, you go watch a soccer match for 2 hours, and it's easy to understand, and it's set up. Like, FIFA's pretty good, at least, with, like, the media access and everything else. Like, this ain't a difficult gig.
No, it's a job. We aren't working a whole lot, though.
So are the U.S. women in Paris for the rest of the way here? Are the final four, for lack of a better term, the semifinals and also the title game all in Paris?
No, they're moving the final four and title game are both in Lyon.
Oh,
which is
that's crazy.
Sort of near Switzerland. Yeah, again, I think they just underestimated the whole event because
why would you not have it in Paris? Lyon.
I
mean, I'm not trying to take a shot. Maybe we got a huge fan base in Lyon, but this would be like having the Super Bowl in Gary, Indiana. You know, I mean, how does that happen?
It's like the NCAA basketball tournament, and instead of the Final Four being in Atlanta
Orleans in a big dome.
Yeah. Instead of the sub-regional in Boise, we're doing the Final Four there.
Yeah.
You know, and you go, wait, what? And that's actually a problem because Lyon has very few hotel rooms. It's very isolated. Like, if you were sitting there saying, I want to go, it'd be very hard to do. And obviously for the U.S., that's a massive, but what if it's Italy or what if it's England or something that's much more approachable? And you're an English soccer fan, you're in London, you go, hey, we want to go watch the semi. Well, there are no hotel rooms in Lyon, so you can't get there. They're all sold out. It's like, okay, forget it. They designed this tournament very, very poorly. And again, I just think it's a missed opportunity for this sport that I think as Americans have shown really will grasp it because it's an exciting brand of soccer and it's an empowering thing. And it's beyond all the social stuff. They're just fun to watch. And they just missed the boat on this, what I think is a great opportunity because you sit in Paris is, you know, obviously either that or London's kind of capital of Europe and you have all these people to get to the game and go to them and they're not jumping it.
We're talking to Dan Wetzel. He's live with us in Paris, U.S. women getting ready for a Friday matchup against France that many consider to be the default final. So that's the question for you as well, is there a sense, and again, I know you're not an expert in analyzing Parisian coverage of women's World Cup here, but is there a sense that this is the title game?
Yeah, I mean, these two teams have played a ton. They play, you know, there's an event every spring called She Believes in the United States, and the French are always in the U.S. kind of go back and forth on it. They go back, they play all the time. You know, these are the top, probably the top two teams right now, and the way this bracket worked out, they're meeting here. So there's certainly a sense, and I think, you know, you heard it from like Jill Ellis yesterday. She's like, yeah, I think, look, everyone wanted this to be the end, but it's fine. Let's do this. We're going to have to go through each other anyway. We both have good teams. Everyone's healthy. No one's suspended. It's going to be a fair fight and let's see who wins. And so I think that's a pretty cool attitude to it. And I actually think it's in some ways it could be better for the event that it's not the final because this game could be really, really good and could obviously would be very exciting if the U.S. wins in America. If not, it's going to draw a lot of attention in Europe. The game's going to be 9 o'clock on Friday night. You know, it's going to be on in bars all over this time zone at least. And I think if you're women's soccer is look, I obviously I'm an American, this audience American wants America to win, but you could see how for women's soccer, they're trying to, the game has grown in America. Like there's no one sitting down going, boy, I got this daughter and she got any soccer leagues around here? Like every single kid plays soccer. So it's building it in this other area. And I think this is going to be a huge event on Friday night.
You're in a unique spot here because you're covering it, like you said, for Yahoo Sports, but you have two daughters who are soccer players that have also been with you going and traveling around in Europe, and they went to the game, I believe, with you guys.
Yeah.
Is that very common? Is that almost all of the audience? I mean, it has to be a pretty cool experience to see so many dads and moms and daughters and sons, but certainly daughters, I think, in particular. The U.S. women's team seems to collect family and young girls in general in their games in the United States. Has it also felt like that in France?
There were tons of families in Reims yesterday before the game. Obviously, a lot of daughters, but sons too. And then there's also kind of this, I don't know, there's a lot of 20, 30-something fans that are there that are kind of take it in. And there's more male fans than I maybe would have expected. But I think the team's been good for so long that, you know, this is just sort of a team to follow. But there's definitely
especially
because
the men are so bad. It's like people just want to follow a winner.
Right, right. This is a win, and they're familiar, and they won the last World Cup. But certainly for my daughters, it was you know, a huge thrill to see. This is the team they like more than any team in sports. Like they follow the U.S. They follow U.S. women's national team more than any sport, any team. And I know there's a lot of people like that. They don't obviously, you know, it's different because you have the World Cup and you have the Olympics, and then you have this lull where none of it really matters. And so you only really get two events every 4 years, then they go back-to-back years that truly matter. So you kind of got to build up to it, and that's the other thing that's it's both difficult, I think, as a fan base, but also just something like so you're so excited for this, like, here we go, because if we don't win this, there is a next year with the Olympics, but then there's this break, and you go, God, I don't know if Carly Lloyd will be back, or, you know, Marta or Christine Sinclair for Canada, all these. You just only get so many shots at the World Cup, and that's why they're just such an historic thing.
Dan Wetzel, thanks for joining us early this morning for us, afternoon for you
no
in France. And maybe on Friday we'll touch base with you again before this big game, if that's possible. But appreciate the time.
Bonjour. I'll brush up on my...
Yeah, good luck analyzing that French Equipe team coverage.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Petros Papadakis at The Old P on Twitter. Petros and Money Show, AM 570 LA Sports is with us now. And first of all, thanks for getting up early. Second, are you surprised that Jeannie Buss chose to break her media silence on the red carpet at the NBA Awards show last night?
No, I don't. I don't think it is out of the realm of possibility for her to make that decision after they got Anthony Davis. I expect her to show up at one of our summer tour events now and take a bow. The Pelinka screwing up the trade and the parameters of when it was done and the $4 million kicker and all that different stuff that you hear the smart people talking about really is embarrassing, though, and solidifies what everybody was saying about the way they were doing business in the first place, and kind of makes it feel like this all happened in spite of the Lakers management. But, you know, Jeannie Buss is a very likable person. She doesn't get a lot of follow-up questions. You know, I'm probably guilty of that too, because she is so likable and she has made herself available for a really long time. But, you know, the last 6 years have been an embarrassment, and they have a hard time grappling with that. There's no doubt. I feel bad for them. They've had success here with Anthony Davis coming in spite of that, which is still a gigantic boon for the franchise, regardless of the mistake that was made.
So how does that happen? I mean, in general, like with an organization that is as big as the Lakers, it seems that they had not gotten the math worked out correctly at the time that they made the Anthony Davis trade. And that there are complexities. And I understand, like, some people out there listening to us right now, they're like, man, it's early in the morning. Like, all the details surrounding the salary cap kind of make my eyes roll back into my head. But
that's how I get in the afternoon.
Yeah, you get that, too, in the afternoon. But this is significant because there is a difference between being able to sign another player to a max contract deal and not. And it's significant because there's a difference between if you're not going to get a max contract guy, having that money to spend on additional players and not having it. It seems unbelievable to me that an organization like the Lakers could make a decision this haphazard and not understand the consequences of their decision.
When you read the articles, national and local, and they say things like, no other NBA franchise runs like this, no other NBA franchise has shadow owner, quote-unquote, Linda Rambis running around and doing stuff that would seem beyond the realm of possibility for somebody who's simply friends with the owner, this kind of verifies all of that stuff, right? This validates everything that anybody's ever said. Like, they don't have a capologist. If they do have a capologist, he's not a good capologist, or they're not listening to him. I mean, it just brings up more questions that people have had for really the last 6 years about how it's running and who's making what decisions. That being said, you know, Anthony Davis running around with LeBron, a healthy LeBron James next year, in a world where things go, you know, almost half smoothly for the franchise, makes them deeply relevant. I mean, that's two of the top five basketball players in the world. So however your front office runs, you could say, look, we have two of the top five basketball players in the world, and, you know, we're going to the playoffs, and we're a contender in a year that the Golden State Warriors obviously don't look like they're going to be one. So, I mean, there is a lot of negativity, but they've really counterbalanced a lot of that with Anthony Davis, and I'm sure that's why she felt comfortable to say something. You know, she made one of those sweeping, what did she say? You know, we don't worry about what we don't govern from the outside or something like that. She said, what did she say?
Something, we played just cuts. I haven't heard the entire full interview, but it was
mostly platitudes and things like that, right? 100% confidence in Rob Pelinka, blah, blah, blah. Well, I remember when no free agent would come play with Kobe. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And she made a sweeping statement, and she came on our radio show and said it. You know, anybody who doesn't want to play with Kobe is a loser.
It's a great line.
But do you remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, this is not the first time she's done that, and I think a lot more people cheered it when it was about Kobe. I think that there have been people that have kind of lost confidence in just the pristine image of Jeannie. It seems like she takes advice from a lot of different people and seems kind of scattered. There's no doubt about it. But, you know, I still like Jeannie Buss. I think that they made it big mistake here, but nobody really knows how big of a mistake it was because this whole process isn't over yet.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of reminds me of, do you do your taxes? Like,
no,
I don't
hell
do my
no.
taxes.
What do you, I don't even pay my bills. What do you think? I don't even write checks. Are you stupid? I mean, I have cartoons and action figures all around me. I do a radio show.
Oh, it's funny you mentioned that because sitting in front of me right now in my home office, I have to remember to pay my electric bill so the electricity doesn't get turned off in the house and my wife doesn't strangle me to death, especially because it's hot and it's the summer. But sometimes
she could use a wire.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they wouldn't be in use.
So, oh, that's very well said. Sometimes I forget to pay my bills too. But when I do my taxes, I hire a accountant and I just kind of hand over everything to him and I tell him, hey, let me know what kind of check I need to make out to the IRS at the end of the year. And then he sends me my taxes and I look at it. And I like it's like it might as well be, and you're Greek, so you're familiar with the phrase, it might as well be Greek to me. Now, I don't understand, similarly, if you are Jeannie Buss, I understand all the complexities of the NBA salary cap. How would you not have, if you run a franchise like the Lakers, one of the best cap guys imaginable to actually crunch all of the numbers and ensure that you are breaking down everything? Moreover, If Rich Paul and is such a smart agent, shouldn't he have a cap guy too? Who's like, look, you got your two biggest clients are LeBron James and Anthony Davis. You want those two guys, now that you have put them together with the Lakers, to be as successful as possible. Shouldn't Rich Paul have a cap guy too? I mean, like, shouldn't the Laker cap guy and the Rich Paul cap guy have gone out to dinner and hammered out, you know, the numbers here? And I'm not a numbers guy, so I'm not pretending to that. I do a television show with a numbers guy and Todd Furman, gambling nerd, getting a numbers guy. But knowing what you're not an expert in is a big part of ensuring that you don't screw up, right?
Understanding your limitations.
Yes.
Especially.
And mine are substantial in many facets.
Mine too. I think the Lakers, that could be kind of a microcosm for the Lakers ownership in general, is understanding your limitations. Now, my radio partner came back from literally Greece yesterday and made a similar point. You know, couldn't they have discussed this with Rich Paul and Anthony Davis? I mean, Rich Paul's in their building with a bunch of his own people placed there. Wouldn't they have talked about this $4 million kicker Wouldn't they have figured that out, you know, before? This is their job.
Yes. All but, of these things are true. Like, and look, I understand if you're Rich Paul and you are not a hardcore numbers guy, right? Like, typically negotiating NBA contracts is not rocket science. You can find out what a max contract is, and he may not spend much time thinking about the impact of when his client is paid and how it impacts the overall salary cap structure. But somebody who is advising Anthony Davis should know this, and somebody who is advising the Lakers should know this as well, and maybe somebody advising LeBron James should know this. Like, this, you should have people who are smarter than you at the cap who are helping you to win games, because ultimately that makes LeBron James, that makes Anthony Davis, that makes Rich Paul, that makes Jeannie Buss, that makes the entire Laker franchise more valuable. This is unbelievable to me to have a failure of this magnitude.
I'll tell you who did know it. David Griffin.
Yeah.
Yeah, that guy knew it.
No, he knew it 100%.
And the
he
Lakers
knew he was getting a $4 million benefit for his team.
Hey, the Lakers could have hired that guy. Yeah. As a front office person. You know, there's no limit to who the Lakers could hire. Now, I don't know if the Clippers are going to get Kawhi Leonard or not. I mean, no one really does. It's a deep mystery. But the Clippers, they know, right? There is no limit on what you can pay people in the front office. And that's why the Clippers have Lawrence Frank, Winger, Jerry West, and a whole bunch of other highly respected guys who have been offered jobs at other places. And Steve Ballmer is just a deep pocket Steve with his cue ball head.
Who, by the way, is also a really good business person and has been wildly successful when he was at Microsoft, yet immediately hires all people who are smarter than him to be the expert on the business side of running the salary cap mechanics, right?
Well, I think that that's the case for every single NBA team nowadays,
yeah,
except for the Lakers, and that's what all the articles say. And, you know, they say, well, we have our own structure, we're very happy with it, we're 100% confident, you know, all the stuff that Jeannie Buss said. But then you see a mistake like this was made, and it is, you're right, Clay, it's a huge deal because, and Bill Plaschke made this point on our show, it's a huge deal because they didn't get every single thing that they could.
Yes.
And you're in competition with a bunch of other people that are getting every single thing that they possibly can out of these trades, these mega trades. And you see what New Orleans was able to glean just out of Anthony Davis. They turned Anthony Davis into like 30 dudes, which may not be comparable to one, you know, top five player, but they certainly got a lot out of a guy who was going to leave anyway. And Anthony Davis and LeBron are on the same team. That's the only thing you could say if you're a Laker fan to counterbalance that. But back to the original point we made when we started talking in this circular way, when you have LeBron James and Anthony Davis, you know, that's pretty good. That validates a lot of, you know, but that's probably only because of the brand, not because of the people running the brand.
Now, we're talking to Petros Papadakis at The Old P on Twitter, AM570 LA Sports, his show Petros and Money, wildly popular in the afternoons in the Los Angeles area. They are in the midst of their summer tour. Now, let me ask you this. Should we apologize to everybody out there listening to us because in the midst of this conversation about the Lakers and their decision-making and Jeannie Buss, we use the O word to describe her, i.e., we described her as an owner, and the NBA has decided that that is a racially offensive term, and they have replaced it with governor. Your thoughts on the NBA deciding that the word owner is racially insensitive?
I was just going to try to ignore that this was happening, kind of like Twilight. You know, I just sort of
you just
never
pretended
knew
that
what
the Mopey Vampire movies didn't happen.
You know, I mean, I didn't know who a wolf was or, you know, which of them was a vampire. You know, I was just going to try to act like this wasn't going on. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Because I think it's, I mean, I can't tell anybody what to be offended by. You know, there's a lot of things that offend me. But
We had 100,000 people.
It's almost just like not understanding language, you know?
And replacing it with a word that doesn't mean the same thing, right? Because there's a big difference between an owner and a
governor. Well, that's kind of a lot of what's happened. I mean, not to get into a political conversation, but, you know, that's kind of a lot of what's happened in modern progressive society. Is just we've replaced all kinds of normal words that have been used for thousands of years with like really complicated academic sounding words that mean something different, that are supposed to make you sound, you know, virtuous and better than others. And it falls on deaf ears when it comes to me. When somebody starts talking about, their truth or speaking truth to power or, you know, any of these phrases you hear these days, it turns me pretty quickly off. And I think the NBA is reacting, you know, very much to that in this situation.
So 100,000 people voted. Not that my Twitter poll is representative of America, but 91% of my audience voting, 100,000 people, which is a lot. Think that is a ridiculous decision they made. More positively, in the city of Los Angeles, the Dodgers are on an absolute tear. They have managed to win, I think, three straight games in walk-off fashion, glorious fashion. Is this the year, Petros Papadakis? Are you willing to predict this is the year that you guys party like it's 1988, that the World Series title resides in Chavez Ravine?
They lost last night.
All right, sorry about that.
But that's okay. They're like 25 games over 500. And they have walked off the Rockies three times in a row with three rookies.
Yep.
So,
and best record in baseball by a substantial margin. You know, plus 130 on the run differential, which is more substantial by 25 runs than anybody else in baseball. Like, this is a team that is rounding into shape. The only question might be, are they too good too early? Are they peaking too soon? Which, look, I mean, it's a good problem to have at the halfway point of the season.
It feels a lot like 2017. They had a similar kind of run. They had a little bit of a lull in August, but at that point they were so many games over 500 and so many games up in the division that it really didn't matter. And they went to the World Series. They should have won. They lost to Houston. So this feels a lot like that. It feels more kind of workmanlike. Clayton Kershaw's in a good mood, which is weird. And they have just great contribution from everybody. You know, guys come up and contribute right away, and that's been kind of a theme. It's obviously a very well-run organization, but, you know, they got rid of Yasiel Puig, they got rid of Matt Kemp, and Chase Utley, who's kind of a stiff, they were all out of the clubhouse, and it seems to have worked wonders. They are pretty special. And now women just keep running out of the stands.
Yeah, I heard about
Cody
that.
Bellinger.
I heard about that. How old was that woman, by the way? Do we know any details about her?
Which one?
This happened more than once?
Happened last night in Arizona.
Oh, I didn't even realize that. I knew it happened before. Another woman ran out to try to beat
the game. Well, there was an unfortunate thing. I was at the game on Sunday for a little while.
I saw your picture. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, I don't get out much. But I saw that ball hit that girl in the head. That was terrible.
Oh, yeah.
And thank God the Dodgers have reacted right away, and they're going to extend the netting out. They announced that yesterday, so that was good. I didn't see the girl run out on the field, except for on social media, because it happened later. And she looked cute.
But, like, I mean, was she over 18? This is not like
a... Oh, yeah. No, she was over 18. And then, you know, this is like Beatlemania.
Yeah. All right. So Danny G is telling me in my ear, by the way, that she was only 15.
Which one?
The one who ran on the field.
The one at Dodger Stadium.
The one at Dodger Stadium.
Oh, 15, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, you're in trouble now. Oh, she was well over 18. Yeah, I'm sure. Tell it to the judge, Papadakis.
Well, you know, those social media pictures pretty grainy there.
Hey, in Petros's defense, she's going to be good looking when she's 18.
Oh, now we're all, the show's going to get canceled over this 15-year-old girl who ran on the field.
Well, how old was the one last night?
Oh, does anybody know how old the one was? I hope she was 40.
Well, first, you know, this happened with the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, you know, where young girls got really excited and they would, like, pee themselves. That's what security people say. Like, back in those old Beatles shows, there were, like, rivulets of pee all in the aisles, if you can believe that.
That's
awful. What Cody Bellinger's doing to the young ones.
Yeah, so that's unbelievable.
It's very exciting.
Yeah, well, thanks for hanging out with us. Thanks for getting us canceled and coming after 15-year-old girls. That's Petros
Papadakis. I didn't come after anybody, first of all. And I'm just glad that she's not going to jail for that long.
Yeah, you know, right.
She's a
minor.
She's a juvenile.
Yeah, she's a juvenile. That is one of the great lines. There's a grainy photo. We need to make sure we pull that.
Look at the photo. It's like the Zapruder film. And you know what? I'll say this. What's wrong with these young people today? They don't wear pants.
You know what? I actually made a joke about that on Instagram yesterday. Rachel Bonetta, who's one of my co-hosts on Lock It In.
I know who host. She is.
Yeah. I'm telling people out there who might not know, not you. She went golfing with her mom, and the pants that she was wearing, I don't even know. They're not even classified as pants. Like, I was like, she was like, my mom taught me how to play golf. And my response was immediately, did she tell you how to wear pants while you play golf? Because I can't even figure out what's going on with the shorts that girls are wearing these days.
No, it's like you have to have your whole ass. Like, how it used to be, you know, in the, like, you see, like, an old movie or something, or something from, like, the...
It's crazy. They cover their waist, but the whole ass is out now. Like, I don't even understand how the shorts work biologically like that. We got to go to break. Petros Papadakis, we'll continue to unpack the way that they make shorts these days. I'm an old man, so's Petros. This is Outkick on Fox Sports Radio.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick, the coverage with Clay Travis, weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
I didn't see the girl run out on the field, except for on social media, because it happened later. And she looked cute.
But, like, I mean, was she over 18? This is not like...
No, she was over 18. And then, you know, this is like Beatlemania.
All right, so Danny G is telling me in my ear, by the way, that she was only 15.
Which one?
The one who ran on the field.
The one at Dodger Stadium.
The one at Dodger Stadium.
Oh, 15, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, you're in trouble now. Oh, she was well over 18. Yeah, I'm sure. Tell it to the judge, Papadakis.
Well, you know, those social media pictures pretty grainy there.
Oh, no. Do you guys not know about the cancel culture that we live in? We are finished now.
No.
From that to R. Kelly?
No, you're the owner of the show, so everything's okay.
Oh, no. I'm the governor of the show. Oh, no. Well, oh, God, we're done for now. We had 300 affiliates when today started. Now we're going to be down to four. We're going to have Topeka, Gary, Indiana. No offense to Topeka and Gary, Indiana, but I can't make a living there. My wife gets on a plane to fly to Omaha. Her husband's rich. When she comes back, I'm unemployed and poor. Welcome back, because all because Petros had to go there. And then we had to follow it up with R. Kelly. Speaking of pee, welcome back to the Geico Outkick Studios. Go further than ever with the Discover It Miles card. They automatically match the miles you earn at the end of your first year, so your 35,000 miles could become 70,000. Discover It Miles. Limitations apply. Discover match for new card members only. Learn more at discover.com/travel. I'm thinking, because there's not a lot going on in the world of sports, honestly, I'm thinking we need to play that cut tomorrow for Petros, and we need to let the Outkick jury decide Petros' fate. That's a whole hour of the show tomorrow we're going to have to do. In hour three, we'll put Petros on trial and see what punishment might need to befall him. I don't know. Or do you find him not guilty? What do you think the Outkick jury will say? That will be tomorrow on a new edition of Judge Judy / Clay Travis in hour three. Should be a lot of fun. In the meantime, the poll question almost done. Nearly 100,000 of you have voted. The NBA decision to replace owner with governor, is it a good one because the word owner is racially insensitive? 91% of you say no. But My thanks to everybody who has come and hung out on the show today. We went to France with Dan Wetzel. We got Albert Breer from Sports Illustrated, who came in and talked about one of the big debates and dilemmas that's facing the NFL in terms of quarterback futures with Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota. The Bucs and the Titans have to make a decision there. And you just heard from Petros Papadakis, who will be on jury trial tomorrow. Can we play that audio clip one more time? I mean, that is phenomenal. This was Petros in the last segment talking about the girls who've been running on the field to try to get close to Cody Bellinger.
I didn't see the girl run out on the field except for on social media, because it happened later, and she looked cute.
But, like, I mean, was she over 18? This is not like...
She was over 18. And then, this is like Beatlemania.
All right. So Danny G is telling me in my ear, by the way, that she was only 15.
Which one?
The one who ran on the field.
The one at Dodger Stadium.
The one at Dodger Stadium.
Oh, 15, huh?
Yeah, you're in trouble now. She was well over 18. Yeah, I'm sure. Tell it to the judge, Papadakis.
Well, you know, those social media pictures, pretty grainy there.
Great spin zone defense by Petros Papadakis. Again, we're going to have some fun with this tomorrow. I'll tell you this. Like, I got the place down on the beach. We were talking about this when we went to break. I don't know what's happened with the bathing suit bottoms that girls wear. It's like they've just, like, I don't even understand the physics of how it works, but they now cover their hips and their whole ass is out. How does that even work physically? Like, they've given up on defending the ass. The ass is 100% out there in these new bathing suits that girls wear, and they now cover their waist. My mind is blown here. This is like giving up the nipple and covering the underside of the boob. I don't understand what's going on here. My world is blown. I'm getting to be an old man. We'll talk about this tomorrow during the trial on Outkick.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.